So welcome to Pax Europiana, and now this will be in the next part after NATO enlargement, after EU enlargement, after OECD enlargement. It's now time for OECD enlargement. My friends always claim I cannot make the good pronunciation difference between OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development based in Paris, and the Union for Market Democracies in my previous podcast. And now the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe. And I really know very well what both organizations are about it. And excuse my pronunciation and if I make the differences. I now want to talk about the organization which was created to talk to the Soviet Union in the mid-70s, in the really terrible 70s, you know, where there was the height of the Cold War, the Western retreat, and the very disastrous situation in Vietnam. And Nixon resigned, the oil shock, the war in the Middle East. This was very dramatic. And then was the idea to basically have a dialogue forum with the Soviet Union, with Brezhnev, and to have this Helsinki dialogue, and then to have some dialogue about human rights and about improvement of the situation together in the soft Cold War, in the ideological Cold War, basically to have a platform to talk to each other. And, you know, we won the Cold War, so it was ultimately a successful element of that Cold War discussion. And of course, you know, human rights is very much the core of what the European Union, what the West is about. And it's very important to have this working platform. And it's, of course, in a crisis in the second Cold War we are in, and it is needs to be reformed. And I will talk about it in this series, in this podcast now. But first of all, let's come back to the role it played in the Cold War. And it really played a strong role because there was then the platform to discuss about human rights and somehow say we care for the human rights in the occupied territories of Soviet Eastern Europe. And it has been a successful charter, the Helsinki Charter, human rights in the Czechoslovak Republic. You know, there was an element, there was a platform, there was a tool to raise these issues. And this has contributed to the success in the Cold War. There were many other factors, and I will make a specific podcast about it. It was, of course, the NATO double track, the oil glut, you know, the strength of the West in the 80s, and the decline of the oil prices, and the Afghanistan war, and the ideological crisis, and simply the lack of success of the Soviet Union economically to provide anything like the prosperity we have in the West. And this prosperity differential was ultimately at the German-German border, which brought down the Soviet Union and the Cold War and led to the victory of the Cold War. We won it economically, strategically, institutionally, and this, I think, is time and again in the Second Cold War. But coming back to OECD's concrete role in 1990, when the Soviet Union started to break up and Eastern Europe was free, then the OECD was again transformed in the Paris Conference. And then it was decided to help all the young democracies in transition with OECD missions and to really have a big, big task now in democratization, in human rights, in organization of the political systems. And this was very much where the OECD has done a major and historic effort in Central and Eastern Europe. And after 2000, obviously also to help the Balkan countries after the war, when there was peace, also in Kosovo, a great contribution in Kosovo, in Serbia, in all Balkan countries. And these were the two historic success roles, the three historic success roles of the OECD. And this is really now time when basically the work is done. You know, of course, there is a lot of talk about, you know, Hungary and Poland, you know, but this is not what the OECD can do. Yeah? And also in the missions in Ukraine are still needed. There's no doubt there's a lot of work there in Azerbaijan as well. You know, there is a lot of work in the Eastern Partnership. But in the Balkans, basically the work is done or the perspective for leaving is already because of success. You know, this is not a permanent institution. The idea is not to go in a country, help transformation, and then to stay forever. It's a task to get done until a certain level. And now with the imminent EU membership, it's obviously once you're in the EU, there's other mechanisms to help and support the rule of law, democracies and other things. So what I say now, in basically we need to enlarge the OECD. You know, I'm very much about enlargement. I believe in these institutions and it has to be enlarged. In which direction now? And the one which is obvious, because after the Arab Spring, we really didn't have a strong institutional answer for the emerging democracies, who are basically also having repeated what Eastern Europe has repeated, has started in 1990. In the moment was then in 2009, 10, and 11 for the Arab socialist countries, because all of them were socialist countries. Yeah, they were not communist countries, but they were socialist ideologically autocrats. And they have then had this Arab Spring, and we were a little bit shell-shocked, yeah, and we didn't really have great answers. Now we have stabilized with the Union of Mediterranean, also with the trade agreements, but we have never managed to really help them substantially in democratization, in reform of the political systems, in all the tasks which the OECD has. And so my talk is, yeah, my proposal, let's include all the Arab League states, all the Union for Mediterranean states, also Israel, and get all these countries and the southern rim and the southern neighborhood, actually Southern Partnership, I prefer, because it's also time to change and upgrade from neighborhood to partnership. What we have done in Eastern Europe already, we need to do in Southern Europe as well. And all these countries to get them into the OECD. And in OSZE, I really have a problem with that pronunciation, but I think I'm getting very clear. The Vienna-based organization, which is there for human rights and democracies, and get the Arab states in. Get Israel in, get the Middle East in, however you want to call this region, the Arab League, the Union for Mediterranean, the Southern Neighborhood, all the countries at the southern rim of the Mediterranean, the Middle Eastern countries, get them in and support these countries with democracies. Obviously not Iran, obviously not Syria, these are hostile countries, but very much Israel, very much future Palestine, very much also Lebanon. And this is really what we can do, where we can help. And this organization is exactly made for that. So that's, I think, very clear. And this has to happen. The second thing for enlargement of OECD, and this may be more controversial, but I remind in that organization is already the Central Asian countries are already there. And that's very beneficial for them. And that's very needed. And so what I call is also to get the other key players of the Eurasian continent into the OECD. That means principally to get Afghanistan in, to get Pakistan in, not Iran, that's a hostile state, but obviously get India in, not ASEAN, because that's a different region with different methods, and we have to focus in our strategic partnership on them, but very much get China in, and get South Korea in, and get Japan in. You know, this is not an exclusive talking shop, just the West with Russia, but let's get China in and let's obviously get Japan and South Korea in. Let's have this topic of North Korea, which will keep us very busy and discussed in the framework of OECD. Let's compete as well with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which the Chinese and the Russians have created, basically the Chinese, because they were not included in OECD and we are OECD. And we really have to make sure that this Shanghai Cooperation Organization is basically disappearing. We don't need it. We have OECD. The Chinese should join, the Japanese as well, the South Koreans. So we can talk about North Korea in that organization. And also we should make sure that all these open issues we have with China, and there are many, we have much more issues with Russia, obviously, because that's the main hostile power, but very much we have many issues with China, from human rights of the Uyghurs to Hong Kong, to digital supervision, to labor camps, to human and political rights democratization. You know, there is 20 issues I have defined, which we have in major issues with China. On the other hand, you know, China is not a hostile power. It has no arms, no troops anywhere outside of China. And I think it will stay like this. So it's about internal transformation and treating the Chinese better. And that's very much what the OECD is expert. And it's really the one organization for that, yeah. So ultimately, I call very much also for East Asia to be there, for South Asia, already Central Asia is there, and to make sure that all these issues are on the table, but not in Vienna. I'm really very sorry for my Austrian friends. I'm Austrian myself, but it's time to find a new home for the organization. It was now very useful to have it in Vienna during the Cold War and during the time afterwards. Vienna was a very useful hub for democratization of Eastern Europe, but Vienna actually is no longer at the border town we have been. I'm talking from Vienna at this moment. We are no longer a border town to the Wild East or to the Communist East. We are now in the heart of Europe. That's very good. We are safe. We are fine. But it's not the perfect location for the tasks ahead of the OSCE. We really have to make sure that the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe, maybe if you want, you can change the title to Eurasia. And, you know, after the great security expert Brzezinski, but, you know, the name is secondary operation. The location matters, I think. Yes, it matters, because it should be one of the better locations to go to Istanbul with that organization, to also signify the importance of Turkey in this new Middle East, in the transformation of the Arab world, and have this perfect location of Istanbul for that one. And I think there will be, of course, some grievances in Vienna. It's a great diplomatic town. But Istanbul is, of course, also fantastic. I'm sure the Turkish government will build a wonderful building if they have this offer. And it should be part of our reset with Turkey, because we need with our ally in NATO some kind of better understanding. We have many, many complicated conflicts with Turkey. And, of course, under the umbrella of NATO, we can solve all of them. But it's complicated about gas in the East Med, about Libya, about Syria, about Azerbaijan. There is many, many issues, especially also about human rights. And again, which organization is about human rights? It's again the OSCE. So I say this organization in Istanbul is an honor for Turkey. I'm sure they will be appreciative. And it makes a lot of sense for as a center for democratization of the Arab world. And also given the huge value which China and Turkey have in their cooperation, it makes a lot of sense as well. And Istanbul has this historic meaning of an important town in global politics. And it is a wonderful town to live for the diplomats which will work there. It is much more better symbolic town for reaching out to the Arab and to the Mediterranean world, and also to the South Asian and East Asian worlds. And I think that's the perfect location for a new OSCE in this new role, which will have to have. Yeah? I'm confident, you know, we have now a new Secretary General. We are coming from a big, big crisis of this organization now in our relation with Russia. And we shouldn't just, you know, give to Russia the monopoly of dominating that organization. It's very important. Yeah? It's a very important tool of conflict prevention in war zones, in Donbass, in Crimea. It should have a much bigger role. And we have to strengthen it. And you can also do a merger between the Shanghai Corporation and between, you know, and I make on Twitter, I made this remark, if we don't offer it to China, one day we will be in a situation where we might have to join this Shanghai Corporation, Corporation Organization, because, you know, there is a shifting relevance in that direction. And this is not what we want. I think we want to make sure that our organizations, which are representing our history, our values, and it's, of course, a bit of a question, are our values the best? But I tend to think yes. And ultimately, I think also the Chinese and the Russians and anybody in the conflict zones in the Middle East wants to live under freedom. The best proof is that so many people want to come to our freedom, to our jurisdiction, to our prosperity. It's not that anybody wants to live in Syria, or it's not a lot of inward immigration from Europe to China. Or, you know, the people want to come to us because it's working, because you have individual security and freedom and rights. And this is basically what the success also in the 21st century will be about. Nevertheless, beyond economics, let's talk about human rights and about democratization. Here we have this cradle of talking, about these important issues with very complicated partners. There can be no more complicated partner than the Soviet Union in the 1970s. Yeah? And we managed to have a dialogue on this. We have to manage to have a Helsinki Charter. We have made some progress in complicated areas with the most hostile and most capable opponent we ever had in the Soviet Union in the 70s. And we have been successful in getting the ideas and concepts promoted and implemented over time. This is all not easy. Also, the illusion that China will change tomorrow and claiming that we shouldn't trade with China, we shouldn't conclude the Chinese trade agreement we just have started to get done in December 2020, the so-called investment agreement with China. It's all an illusion that China will open in 2 years or even in 30 years that it will be a perfect democracy. I don't think so. But step by step, we can have mutual respect, yeah? Avoid any conflicts, yeah? Get the concept of human rights and democracy promoted as a common standard over time. Yeah? And this is, I think, a major possibility. And so I call very much on for enlargement of OECD, including the Arab world, the Middle East, or the East Asia, and also the complicated countries of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Get them in, get missions set up there, and make sure that we are really engaged and we are not in a big withdrawal since we have been since 2013, unfortunately, but we are somehow steadfastly putting pillars of reasonable governance in economic and democracy with the OECD, but in human rights and political governance in the OECD. That is really very important. And that's, I think, what we should achieve with that organization, with a reform based in Istanbul and with enlargement of that organization. And let me close with a little bit of a thought. I will now talk then about also about the Council of Europe and about the WTO and about the UN. But the OECD should also have a little bit of a competition towards the UN, which is a little bit sleepy with its structure from the 45 and with this veto power of Russia and China. So it's important to have in Eurasian continent, where most of the conflicts of the 21st century are potentially there in our relation with Russia and China. So it's in this very fragile area in the Middle East as well, and where we have this fundamental catastrophe of our decade, the Syrian civil war. And so in that area, really, we need a little bit more governance and, I think, competing in a sense, because some people can say, we have anyhow the UN, why we need such an enlarged OECD? And that argument I want to address, because some kind of say, oh, Günther wants to have 100 members in OECD and that's a duplication of our effort. Let's better focus on reforming the UN. Yes, absolutely. I will talk about that one in the next episode. But it's also important to have this sub-level regional organization where the Africans and not the South Americans are there, where the structure is less bureaucratic and it's really focused on conflict prevention and, which has a proven track record in the region, which has exactly these tools which the OECD has on the municipalities, in human rights, in political elections. And this second tool is very, very important to promote democracy and human rights. Ultimately, that's what we should all be very much focused about. And that's why I call for enlargement of the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe, maybe Eurasia, change the name, not a problem. We cannot keep all the organizations exactly the same like they were in 38, sorry, or in 1990 or in 75. In 2020 and 21 and the next years, they require some institutional changes. No fundamental, let me make that point, no fundamental, we don't need a new economic system, we don't need a new world order, we don't need to throw everything apart in the corona crisis, that's all bullshit. Yeah? What we need to do is we have to make sure that we adapt the working system to the challenges of the time, And this is basically what we have to do also with this very important fourth pillar of the present world order. It has done really tremendous works in 75. Now it's time to focus south, to focus east, new location. It has already a new leadership and get the same tasks rolled out, but just for more countries to benefit for it and to have good governance promoted in the Middle East and in South and East Asia. Thanks a lot.